I've had to come on my phone at the moment. The machine's playing up for some reason.
You had to what?
You had to come on your phone.
Jesus Christ. Oh, you know.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the PS Football Podcast. We've made it to double figures, can you believe it? My name is Sam Steen and I'm back at the hot seat. And first off, I just want to say a massive thank you to Shawnee B for taking care of the show for the past 2 weeks. For more of him, check out his podcast, A Pint with Shawnee B. Joining me today, we have the usual PS Football crew of Peter Henry, Carl Williams, Scott Bowman and Danny Ward. And we'll run the rule over an exciting weekend in the Premier League where, among other things, City were stunning, Morata made his mark, Kane killed West Ham and Nias nicked the winner for Everton. We'll also have the usual quiz, quotes, JT Prick of the Week, and we'll look ahead to next week's fixtures. Let's get on with the show. All right, guys, thanks for joining us, and it's good to be back, I have to say. So there's plenty of football to talk about, so let's talk about the terrible Spurs video first, because we need to talk about it. Who wants to kick us off on this? I guess, Carl, can you defend it?
Absolutely shocking, in my opinion. Any of these fans who make these songs just need their head tested, because no real fan wants something like that done or made by their club. And as I said to Scott at some point when I saw it, the worst bit for me is that the actual club have allowed them access to the ground to make this song. You know, they've given them access to the dressing rooms, the stadium, the pitch. Oh, absolutely dreadful. What an embarrassment.
Yeah, but you know what? Spurs have history in this, don't they? It's not the first terrible fan song video that's been up there from your club, is it?
No, you've got Caned. That's a new one. Scott,
I love that. I love that. I had you going for a week over that.
You know, you just got caned, as they say. But yeah, we've had a couple of these now, and it is cringeworthy, isn't it?
Lads, anyone else want to jump in on that one?
Of course I do. You ain't about me. I mean, the good thing about Spurs is, I mean, they're a good football club. They're well run. Obviously, they're doing well in the league. But the one great thing about Tottenham is their fans are the cringiest in the league. I don't care. Whatever you say, when it comes to doing any of this fan can stuff as well, because they're just as bad, they are cringeworthy. West Ham play up to their stereotype. I won't deny that. There's no two ways about it. But more Circle of Life videos to come out of White Hart Lane, the better it is for me and the league season ahead.
Now I'm just a bit upset because I had that in as my prick of the week. So that not only is it did it offend me by watching it, now it's just stolen my thunder for later on in the show.
Ruined it. Well, should we chat about? We'll just get right into that then. Spurs and West Ham, because in the lead up to this game, a bunch of people were saying. I think Jacob Steinberg in the Guardian was talking about how. He thought that West Ham could actually do with looking at Spurs as an example of how to run the club. Scott, have you got any thoughts on that? And how are you feeling after that game? I mean, not a terrible result, I guess, when you look at it, but they weren't great again, were they, West Ham?
In the grand scheme of things, I've got no complaints about the result. There was a little bit at the end where we tried to come back. You know, we're playing one of the better sides in the league. And when there's nothing riding on the game, Spurs can go out there and play their football and win. When there's something riding on the game, they tend to choke and we can laugh at them. But I always refer to those games as our cup final. I always think it's the other way around. I think it's their cup final because going back again, the previous two seasons, there was something riding on it and they inevitably choke. So who's the pressure on at that point and whose cup final it is? We've always been party poopers and Man United fans can attest to that, because when there's something on the line, we like to turn up and spoil the party. And it's not a cup final when we're doing it. We're not going to win it, so we might as well spoil it for someone else. That's just the way it is at West Ham. But as far as the actual result, I can't really argue about it. I put my tin hat on, I took my stick, I took it like a man, and it will come back round to when we play at Wembley, where Spurs can't win a game, we'll probably win that 1-3-0 comfortably. On to Jacob Steinberg's comments, I can see his points, absolutely. So, I mean, Spurs, I'll take my claret and blue specs off for a minute. They're a great club. They're run really well. They're trying to compete with the biggest and best in the land. So why wouldn't we want to copy that sort of the way that Tottenham are run from top to bottom? To say otherwise, you'd be a little bit silly. I want to see West Ham win something in my lifetime, because so far I've got the Intertoto Cup and the playoff final, and I don't really think they count. So, Spurs deserve the win. Let them have it. They're not going to win anything this season. Their team's got to break up. So at the end of the season, who's going to be laughing?
Oh, talk about sour. Fucking great.
What about it, Carl? Then is there any truth in that?
Well, first of all, the bit about the cup final, Scott is talking absolute bollocks, if I don't mind saying. It's the only game West Ham turn up for all year. But unfortunately for them, this time it weren't under the lights and it weren't near the end of the season. But it is true, we've choked the last couple of years. But I thought West Ham did themselves all right, to be honest, apart from having potentially just a couple of moments of madness. The way the game started in the first half, that game was open. You know, West Ham were coming forward as well as we were. So that game could have potentially gone either way. But, yeah, they got sloppy at the back a couple of times. And when you've got Kane up front, you know he's going to take advantage of those moments. So, yeah, they got punished. If Ali had been on his game, we potentially could have, that could have been 4 or 5. And, of course, if, you know, the fullback and the French guy doesn't have a moment of madness, where, again, you know, I'll keep banging on about Gamecraft, but you're free up. You've just been booked. You don't make that sort of tackle, you know. You see the game out. But credit to them, they came back. But unfortunately, they're just not on our level, are they? So,
talking about Gamecraft then for Spurs, you could probably say the same about West Ham, Scott, because Bilic seemed to make a few dodgy decisions again.
Yeah, well, the Antonio replacement being Carroll, he was responsible for, I think, 2 of the goals in the end. He just doesn't know how to see a game out, and he doesn't stick with a decision. When something's working for him, he seems to panic, and he wants to stick with Carroll. He seems to rely heavily on Carroll, and we've got a goal-scoring striker sitting out on the wing again. And that's really concerning for us as West Ham supporters, because where are the goals going to come from? I know we got 2 back. You could say Spurs sort of switched off. And I agree with Carl. We started off pretty well, but yeah, there's big concerns. Everyone likes Bilic, as I've said in the past, and everyone wants him to do well. But, I mean, I think for West Ham to move forward, even with the dodgy owners at the back, I think he needs to go, and we need to get someone a bit more pragmatic short-term in. I just want to point out something, and this is to other West Ham fans. It was nice to see Noble sticking a shift, even if it got really physical. But that makes the Spurs West Ham games, and I thought he was probably, arguably, our best player on the day. But, yeah, Bilic for me, your time's up, mate. Off you pop.
Out of order to the Japanese, though, isn't he, Noble? Out of order, labouring them all Chinese. What a disgrace.
You've disgraced yourself. Apparently, you're South Korean, so well done on offending the nation again. You've just done a Noble.
Danny, what about Liverpool then? Because, again, good going forward and dodgy at the back. Mignolet, kind of his entire career and everything about him was just encapsulated in that performance.
Yeah, it seems to be, yeah. Not a bad record from the penalties. I think saved 7 from 15, but I was reading something Carragher said. Only fans not entertained by Liverpool are their own fans. And I think he's right. It's just so tough to watch them. When you go 2-0 up, Carl's always talking about game craft, you know. It's not the terminology I'd use, but it's using your head, knowing how to kill a game. And Liverpool just don't seem to have it. They've only got one way of playing. When United went 1-0 up against Southampton, you kind of think that's it, job done. And it's only one goal. Liverpool need to be 3-0 up for me to kind of relax. But there were some positives from the game, you know, and there's been positives from Liverpool's season. I know I bashed them last week a bit, but there have been positives. Coutinho being back is brilliant. I thought he sprinkled a little bit of stardust on the team's performance. The cross for the first goal, some people might look at it and think it was an overhead cross. I'd seen him and Salah in pre-season, and they seemed to strike up an understanding with each other straight away. There was a goal against Bayern Munich and a couple other moments, one against Leicester, where Coutinho spotted Salah's runs. And that looks like that could be really promising. When Coutinho starts to find his rhythm, Liverpool start to click again. What Liverpool have missed, I think, at the start of the season have been the two midfielders, Coutinho and Lallana, who can break a line with a little turn, who can go past the defender, opening up the pitch where they'll have Salah, Firmino and Mane, who are all very clever, quick, incisive players. So if you have Coutinho purring, that makes a big difference to Liverpool. I thought Henderson was immense, and I haven't said that this season at all. It was the best I've seen him since the start of last year. First couple of months of last year, if you look at most stats, a bit like Matic this year, Henderson was leading all the stats for yards covered, passes, interceptions, blocks, all that sort of stuff. Henderson was top of the pops. But in saying all that, I don't know if he's the man to sit in front of that horrible back four of ours. When I say horrible back four, I did a little bit of digging here. Liverpool have had the least amount of shots against them all season, yet they've conceded 11 goals in six games in the Premiership.
I heard an unbelievable stat the other, earlier on, which was they concede a goal for every seven corners that they that they face, which is the regular average is 1 in 50.
You'd wonder why people get excited when their team gets a corner down. No? Yeah. You do see that the crowd gets really up if it's a 1 in 50 chance, you know. But one in seven.
I mean, you could.
What's the average per game then about? So most teams would average 5 or 6 in a game.
Exactly.
No?
So yeah, they probably would. A goal a game from a corner, you know.
Yeah. Like if you look at it, Liverpool haven't. I was looking up a list there today. Liverpool haven't conceded a goal from an error from a player. I know that sounds really far fetched. Because there's just they're as error strewn or strewn as any team out there. But they haven't conceded a goal from an individual error. I think I'm not going to get into set pieces now that I've been there. I've done it. The concentration levels aren't there. Liverpool's main problem for me is they attack as a team. They attack as one. So when they get broke on quickly, they, as I said, they don't face many shots, but when opposition teams get a chance against them, it's usually a good chance because Henderson's out of position, Moreno's up playing in the Salah or Mane position, and you've two centre-backs who, they might look like the worst centre-backs in the world, but they're exposed, and I don't care what centre-back, you put Franco Baresi in there, if he's exposed with three runners running at two centre-backs, the chances are they're going to get a shot off and the chances are they might score a goal as well. It's there's no ruthlessness, there's no dirtiness in Liverpool either. There's no, again, as Carl says, gamecraft. If some guys run away from them, it's like they've been told, right, we don't want you to get a booking. Because Liverpool, I know Liverpool, there are some of their parts and they need everyone in that team. You saw what happened against Man City. If someone gets sent off for Liverpool, it all crumbles. So they need everyone there. And I wonder, is it a directive from the manager to make sure they don't get sent off? Because he thinks, right, even if we do concede one, we'll outscore other teams. And you can't win football. You can win football matches like that, granted, but you can't win leagues like that. You need to have a little bit of nastiness in you. Take your book, and if it means you're suspended next week, you've got to be able to see that things are happening in front of you, and there's danger there. And Liverpool don't seem to see it, and they just seem to shoot themselves in the foot week in, week out, and they make it really, really unnerving for their fans to watch. And again, I'd say that transmits to the players when they're playing at home. So they'll need to sort that out. They've no defensive coach. And I think until they get a defensive coach, I think they're really in trouble.
Peter, any word on Leicester? They're sitting down in 17th now, which seems a bit harsh considering they're not actually playing all that badly, but they're just not getting the results.
Yeah, like you said, they aren't playing that badly. They've had a tough start. I'd say them and Everton have probably had the toughest starts yet. It was at Arsenal, Chelsea, and now Liverpool. They played already in their first few games. Vardy looks in good form, although his penalty was a disgrace because I think it was obvious. Like he keeps hitting the penalties into the same place over and over again. I was sitting in the pub. I even knew he was going to put it there. So I thought that was poor. It was just lazy on his part, but you're just kind of looking at Shakespeare, and maybe is he one of these guys who's a better coach than a manager? I know he's a lot of respect in the game, and everyone says what a nice bloke and good coach he is, but they had a big bounce when he came in after Ranieri left last year. They won a lot of games in a row, and then they became safe quite early in the season. But if you combine the games from last season, they've only won 3 of their last 14, which isn't great form, albeit they've had the tough start. So they'll definitely need to start picking up points soon. But having said that, I still think Leicester are quite a solid team. I know Maguire was at fault for one of the Liverpool goals the other day, but I think he's been a really good sign. And Vardy still looks sharp. Mahrez, I think, will come back into form probably just before January because he needs a move. And Didi's a good player in there as well. I think Leicester will be kind of mid-table between 14th and 9th, I'd say, come the end of the season. But, you know, we all know how the Premier League is. If they have another 2 or 3 bad results in a row, they play Bournemouth next, I think it is, away. Eddie Howe, he's also struggling a bit down the bottom. So if they don't start picking up results soon, the pressure could build on Shakespeare. So, it'll be interesting to see how things pan out for them over the next few weeks.
Let's talk about United and Southampton then. Peter, we'll stick with you. United win again, made to work a bit harder this time. But with Southampton's scoring record, it kind of looked like it was only going to go one way.
Yeah, they really had to ground it out. But in many ways, it was like the ultimate Jose Mourinho win, wasn't it? Like your star striker gets an early goal. You dig in, then you see out the result 1-0, and then he even got sent off, which made it the perfect Jose Mourinho performance, I suppose. Yeah, I've been saying it for the last 6 weeks. As a United fan, I'm not going to say they're definitely going to win the league or anything like that. I'm just looking for improvement on last year, and it just felt again on Saturday. And it seems like I've been like a broken record. I'm saying it every week, but it just seems so many of the games that. That's the game where I think United would have conceded and drawn the game last year, you know. So there are just gradual little bits of improvement there. And sometimes I think it's good winning games 4-5-0, you know what I mean? But I remember when I played football, the games that really bring you together as a team and make you start believing in your mates beside you and all, they're the games like that the other day where you weren't at your best, you get a goal and you hang on. They're the ones when you go in and you look at your teammates and you go, Jesus, lads, we put in a fucking shift today, you know. So that's good to build a bit of confidence that they can see them games out, because they were struggling to see games out last season. Apart from that, I suppose you're right in another way, Sam. On the flip side, Southampton, that's now the 8 out of 9 games that they've not scored at home. So you could say, well, maybe United made it even harder than it should have been. And I don't get it with Southampton, because I don't know why they can't score goals at home, because they've got some good players there. We said it last week. Lamina and Romeo were class again the other day. Manic wasn't half as dominant as he has been in most games this season. Boufal, their record signing, he's got great talent, that boy. Tadic, I think, is a good little playmaker. Gabbiadini, I'm not sure what's happened to him. He looked like he was going to light the league up.
The boil, isn't he?
Yeah, he looked like he was going to light the league up last year. Remember, he came the first couple of months, he was running amok.
I think Liverpool already had an offer on the table, because you know what I mean. It looked like it was going to happen, and
Charlie Austin's. He's not the best. You know, he's not top end, but Charlie Austin will get you a few goals.
He's not bad, and long though. Like
he's long, your only. Though. He's not. He's
your
not
only boy up front. I don't understand how you can carve out a career for yourself as a striker by not scoring goals. Honestly, you know, he must have scored goals. Though, he must have fucking. I know, but he must have scored goals at some level. He must be able to finish. How can you, like, going through the ranks, playing in Irish football and playing for the teams he played for coming up?
He's a good record at Reading.
Yeah, he had a good record at Reading, but a bit of that was in the Championship, I think. You have to score goals. How does that spark anyone's interest in you? You know, you're good at running around. Fucking sign Mo Farah then.
I guess if you're probably he's probably lucky to have broken through at the time when he did, when midfield's team started playing five in midfield and playing one up front, who was just sort of the focal point for all the others to play around, you know.
He's a nuisance to play against. I'd say you're a centre back, you'd hate to see him, but he's one of them players that, for fans and the rest of us, we look at his stats. Now, I love him because he scored against the Germans, but apart from
he's
that,
he's 1-5, I'd say.
Not even Danny. I think he goes 15, 20 games without a goal sometimes now.
You must be depressed beyond tablets if you're a striker. Going on and playing 90 minutes of football. Like, I remember just even at the shitty level I played, if you played 90 minutes,
you'd be
you didn't
up all
score.
Night if you didn't score, you missed a chance, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I don't know how he sleeps.
Yeah, honestly. He must be on some serious tablets to sleep, because his head must be wrecked. Obviously, I understand it's a team game and you're putting in a shift and all that, but that has to be backed up by the work he does. It has to be supplemented by the midfielders, all right, or the wide players. So his off the ball running down channels and all that, it's meant to free up space for other players to come into the middle and score the goal. They're not scoring goals from midfield or out wide either.
They're not scoring goals anywhere.
Yeah, I know. So what's the point in having a player that does that?
The managers seem to love Danny.
Yeah, no, I know. I understand they love him.
You know what I mean? So,
I understand they love him. I'm asking why. That's my question.
I think it's just purely down to work rate and knowing that he'll chase things into the corners and the rest. I fully agree with you. There's no point in being a striker if you don't score goals. Just working hard.
It's okay.
Come into play with the manager's thinking is what I'm saying.
No, I know. What I'm saying is, though, it's okay if you score a goal, if you don't score goals, but the team score goals as a result of the work you do. But when the team don't score goals as the result of the work you do, what's the point of doing that said work? No point.
Yeah, no, you're right. And even when you look at them, you know, in terms of free kicks, like Ward-Prowse, he's one of the best deliveries.
Ah, he's great,
in the
great
league as well.
Yeah, so I like him.
I don't know why they just, and so they seem to have a very tidy team. Even when you look like Bertrand and Suarez, Cedric, or whatever you call them, and the two fullbacks, they're a very, very tidy team. But if they don't start scoring goals soon, it's going to be a long out season for them. They accused, I thought it was a bit. Puel, they were accusing of playing boring football last year, but since he left, they still can't score. And I think me and Sam had we were on another podcast last year, and I was kind of saying,
"How dare you?"
You look at Southampton, and it was about 5 or 6 years ago that club was playing in League One, right? And now they came up, they finished seventh, I think eighth last season, got to the AFL Cup final. And I kind of thought, now I'm not a Southampton fan, I didn't watch every game, but I thought, the fans are getting, you know, a bit above their station here. Kicking a manager out for finishing eighth and getting to an EFL Cup final. Because when we talk about the top seven and all being kind of set in stone these days because of the disparaging or because of the different levels of money the clubs have. So where else can Southampton go apart from eighth? So it's a bit harsh, like, you know.
They could. If Southampton had kept all their players for the last 4 or 5 years, Southampton could and should be in the Champions League. I know that might sound... a bit far-fetched, but they could be up with, but they have a great keeper, they have two good fullbacks. If they'd Van Dijk,
well, Liverpool are in the Champions League, so we can safely say they would have finished fourth last year.
They could have a cracking side, but obviously they have to get rid of.
Well, here's a good stat for you regarding all of that. Going into this game, Lukaku had scored more league goals than Southampton, despite attempting 47 fewer shots.
Oh, wow.
So, and he scored again, obviously, there, adding to his tally, taking him to the top of the scoring charts, along with Aguero, Morata, and Kane's up there as well. So, who do we think is going to finish top scorer this year? Because it's looking pretty interesting.
Oh, take your pick.
I mean,
yeah, it's going to be good. I'm going to go with, if I had to put money on it right now, lads, I would go for Sergio Aguero. Just purely due to the fact that I think Lukaku will probably get between 25 and 30 this season if he plays for the whole year. Kane will be in and around there. Morata will do well as well. But I just think that City are the only one of them teams up there that when they play the Crystal Palaces and the Swanseas and you know, teams in the bottom half, they could pump them 5 or 6-0 and Aguero could be scoring his goals in twos or threes, where the rest of the lads, I know Morata got a hat-trick and Kane's had a couple of doubles, but I see City scoring the most goals in the league. I'm not saying they'll definitely win the league, but I think purely in terms of goals scored, they will probably score the most. So for that reason, I think Sergio Aguero will probably just come out on top. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was, say, two or three that broke the 30-goal mark this year, the way it's shaping up already.
Should we chat a little bit about City then? Because, obviously they're scoring goals for fun in the last couple of games. Obviously Palace, not a huge challenge for them, but they are looking terrifying.
Yeah, you can't argue with the fact that City going forward look a dominant force, don't they? You know, so many players that they've got to choose from, you know, both Silvers, De Bruyne, Sané, Aguero, you know, Jesus. When you've got Jesus in your team, you've got a chance. And but you can't argue with, I agree. I think when they play those smaller sides, they'll give a few of them a good tonking. But I guess now we wait to see what happens when they come up against what we call a real good side, don't we? Because I still feel potentially they're vulnerable to those games against teams like Chelsea, where Chelsea will go with a game plan to sit back and, you know, suck up the pressure and then smack them on the break.
You don't have to wait long.
Sorry?
It's this Saturday. You won't have to wait long, man.
Yeah, and it is whether they can still, you know, turn those sort of games from the defeats they've had in the past into actual wins. And that's the real test for them. They won't struggle against the lower league sides and even some of the mid-table teams. They'll give them real hammerings this year because they can afford to rest Aguero and still bring in the sort of talent that you could only dream of. But it's whether they, when they play for United and Mourinho and Conte, Chelsea have already shown against us that first game what their game plan, I think, will be against a team where they feel they need to sit back and just soak it up. And City will be there, and to be, you know, they'll be within the top two, I think. So if someone finishes above City, then you're probably looking at your champions there.
Yeah, I only saw the highlights of that game now, but Palace, I think it was Loftus-Cheek, they created a couple of real chances in the first half. And then obviously City get a few goals and they run away with it. But the way they play, I think Danny talked about it earlier on, about the two centre-backs. The difference, you know, when you're a set-back four, it's easy to defend. But City, they bomb them full-backs on so much that their defenders are, the two centre-backs are usually asked to defend in two-on-two situations a lot of the time. So I definitely think they'll give up chances along the way. And even if you look at Bayern, that was kind of their failing in the Champions League. You remember they got pumped 4-5 at the Allianz Arena by Real a couple of years ago in the, when Ancelotti was the coach of Real, actually. And it was purely because Ancelotti targeted the fact that Guardiola leaves such his centre-back so exposed. So I think this weekend will be a great test of City, because hopefully Hazard is ready to start, and maybe Willian or Pedro from the other side. We'll know a lot more about City, I'd say, after this coming weekend.
Palace, then, they're the first team to lose their first six games of the season without scoring a goal. Can we all agree that they're pretty much fucked?
They're fucked.
Hopefully.
See you later.
What about Chelsea then, Peter? You were chatting a little bit about them there. They are flying, and Morata in particular, proving that they're not going to miss Costa too much.
I think he settled a lot quicker than I expected. You know, we talked about it, I think, on the first ever podcast about, you know, Lukaku or Morata, the advantage of having either. And I think we all kind of agreed that the fact that Lukaku had a proven Premier League record and he'd been playing regular first-team football for a much longer time than Morata made him a better signing. But here we are, and they're both sitting on six goals. What's impressed me with him as well is his hold-up play seems to be good. He's kind of shown a bit of everything so far. He scored different types of goals, a couple of good headers. I thought the second goal the other day, the curl finish into the top corner was a brilliant.
Class, yeah. I don't think anyone saw that sort of pace. I didn't. I didn't.
He, when he came on in the Community Shield, actually, he burnt Toby Alderweireld at one stage. And I remember thinking, geez, I didn't know he had that in him, you know. So,
I hadn't seen that with Juventus or Madrid. But geez, he left him for dead, and he was cool as you like. I think it was two or three touches, and every touch was spot on.
Every touch
put him into the exact position he wanted to get, and as cool as a cucumber to finish. I thought he was going to score a lot. And I think the first two or three goals he scored were all headers from that kind of just outside the 18-yard box, a little clip ball into the kind of penalty spot. I thought, yeah, he'll get a lot of goals through that until someone spots that that's a ploy from Chelsea. But to show that he can do that as well, it really, like the timing of that hat-trick, Conte must be smiling now with Costa packing his bags and shipping off. I'd say he must be thinking, thank God for that, because if Morata had come in and hadn't hit the ground running, Chelsea could have been in a bit of trouble, because Batshuayi seems to do okay in cup competitions and that, but I don't know if they would have been happy just to have him as their number one striker. But Morata, I have to say, he surprised me, and he looks worth every penny of that 60 million.
Yeah, did you see as well with him? I don't know if you noticed, Azpilicueta is assisting nearly all his goals.
Who?
Dave has been assisting all his goals, and he's assisted four of his six goals. It's the highest, relationship between a player assisting and a player finishing in all of Europe's top leagues. So they're obviously they're best mates of two Spanish.
But did you see the ball? A lot of he even chested one down, but I think he's clipped the ball into the box three times. It was the sort of goal that remember Dele Alli got two against Chelsea last year. And people were actually using that. Liverpool scored against Chelsea with a similar sort of goal in Anfield. But it's like Chelsea have actually adopted that strategy on how people were targeting them. It looks like they're now targeting teams, which if the manager has done that and that's on purpose, it's very clever. And it's kind of a right back at us. We can do that too. So hats off to him if he has done it.
Yeah, I do. Just one final thing though on that, lads. I wrote an article, I put it up on the site called adios, Diego Costa, the one and only, I think I call it. But Morata's been good, right? But I have to say, I don't think he can be a direct replacement for Diego Costa, because I don't think there's another footballer in world football who can play that lone striker role the way that Costa did it. The way, when he was on top form for Chelsea over the last three seasons, he was just unplayable. Like, the way he could pin back a defence and just be an attacking spearhead.
He was the closest thing to Drogba, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think Drogba was probably the last one who could do that, you know. Like a one-man wrecking ball up front. And he caused so many problems, biting, spitting, all sorts of things. He'd probably distract defenders into leaving little gaps for Pedro, Willian and Hazard as well. And I wouldn't say we'll miss Costa, because he'd annoy you. But, yeah, he was one of a kind. It was entertaining to have him over in the Premier League for a few years anyway. So, and I'm sure he won't be out of the headlines too much in Atletico anyway. He'll do something a bit mad soon enough, I'd say.
Yeah, I read that piece and I kind of disagree a little bit, because not with any of the points he might make footballing-wise, but I think I will miss him. I thought he was great crack. He was just so much fun to watch. I mean, even though, you know, he's one of these players that people go, oh, you'd hate it. You hate playing against him, but you'd love him in your team. But, you know, he's only playing your team twice a season or something like that.
You couldn't take your eye off the game if he was playing.
What was that brilliant game? I meant to look it up actually before we did this, about wasn't there one when he just absolutely kicked all around him and he got players sent off all over the place? He was been an absolute bastard for about 15 minutes and didn't even get booked himself and then scored. What was that one?
Well, the best that is, he only received one red card. And when you consider that nearly every game you saw him play, it was like he was a breath away from being sent off. It was some record to him, like, fair play.
Yeah. I'd say the refs were afraid of him.
Probably, yeah.
Afraid of a bit of that, you know.
Right.
Did you hear one of his most famous things to do was spitting on his hand and then rubbing it on the shirt of one of the defenders?
Let's just remember, he was only scary because he was ugly. And I mean proper ugly.
Oh, he was, wasn't he?
Right, moving on. Let's do the quiz. Where did we stand last week? Who won it? Danny, was it you who won it last week?
I won it, yeah.
Well done. But I will have to go back through the other ones and see what the scores are, so we can make up the league table. But let's stick, Danny, let's put you up against Carl today. Jamie Vardy missed a spot kick at the weekend, but who has missed the most in Premier League history?
Danny.
Yeah.
Most penalties, kicks in Premier League history.
Could Google that.
Gonna say Michael Owen.
No. Carl?
Rooney.
No, that's wrong. I'll give it back to you again, right? So head to head, this is the sudden death round, okay? You've got to get your name first, and then we'll go to you. So Jamie Vardy missed a spot kick at the weekend. Who has missed the most in Premier League history? And this player has also scored the most.
Danny.
Yeah.
Shearer.
It is Alan Shearer. Well done, Danny, through to the final. All right, then. So the other question to Peter and Scott. Aguero, Morata and Lukaku share the top spot in the goal scorers charts, but which other player leads the way in terms of assists?
Scott. So just
Scott.
De Bruyne.
Nope. Peter.
Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Neither Danny. Of you got it right. So Danny, I think.
Danny,
go on for extra points.
David Silva.
It is David Silva. I think we can leave it there. He is the champion. We don't even need the third question. Danny wins for the second week in a row, and we'll go to a break. We'll be back talking a whole load more Premier League action and, of course, doing bad Northern Irish impressions. Very quickly, I just want to take the chance to tell you how to get in touch with the show and get loads more great Premier League content. There are new articles going up every day on our website, psfootball.net. You'll find links to some of the articles mentioned in the show in the info section of this pod. And if you sign up to our newsletter through our homepage, you'll get all the latest news, videos and betting tips. We're on Twitter at @PS_football, on Instagram at @PSFootball, that's football with a U. We're on Facebook, and if you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the pod, follow us on SoundCloud or subscribe on iTunes. And we're back, and it's time for the quotes of the week. And this week, for some reason that I just can't understand, we're doing a Northern Irish person again. Peter, why is that? Anything to do with the...
Yeah, I don't know. It's just chance. Just purely down to chance, I think, Sam.
I mean, after the top-class Italian efforts I heard last week, I can't understand why you'd go back to this. But
Brendan Rodgers does have some absolutely outstanding quotes, to be fair.
He does. Brendan Rodgers.
I do like Brendan Rodgers, but... He sounds Glaswegian to me, and he's never lived in Glasgow apart from now. He was living in England most of it. But previously, otherwise he sounds Glaswegian. He does not sound like he's from Northern Ireland. And was it you, Danny, who sounded like Mario last week?
Yeah, a couple of lads said that to me, all right. Yeah.
Lads are asking.
They wanted me to paint their house.
All right, Peter, you might as well get us going on this one. Tell us your favourite Brendan Rodgers quote.
Okay. Before I actually say this and everyone starts laughing, I'd just like to say that this stat sounds great. Not how I do the accent, but the quote itself sounds really impressive and really good. There's only one problem. It has zero, and I mean zero factual fucking evidence to back it up. He just made it up and just thought that nobody else in the room of football journalists would actually look and then say, actually, Brendan, that's bullshit. So here we go. I've always... Oh, bollocks.
Did he say that as well? bollocks.
I've always worked along with the statistic that if you can dominate the game with the ball, you have a 79% chance of winning the game. It's just bullshit. He just made it up.
You made that up as well. You talking. Did you do the accent?
I thought that was all right. I picked Northern Ireland, man.
It wasn't too bad. Yeah, it was all right. Carl, what about you?
For me, a good one from Brendan was when he said, I will leave no stone unturned in my quest for greatness or relentless. That quest will be relentless. Complete bollocks from the bloke.
except that you read it in a Southern Irish accent. That is woeful.
I don't know what that was. Okay, Scott. Yeah,
for the first week ever, I can safely say I'm not going to go down as the worst accent.
No, I don't know about that, mate.
Scott, go on, help us out here.
Well, I've got to say this. I mean, again, to me, sounds Glaswegian, which is strange considering where he's from. And the fact he speaks in a really slow way. And I can tell before each interview, he's in a mirror just before he goes out, learning his lines. He's a strange bloke. But here we go. I don't think there is anyone better. That is the really how I see it.
Okay.
He does think he's going to blow up your house.
He does. That's Liam Neeson there.
It was. But that's how it sounds to me.
Can you do the quote from Taken, please?
I've had a full line. Let me Google it quickly. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. I do have a very particular set of skills I have acquired over a very long career, skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you, Sorry Will.
I was going to say, you have to put Sorry Will.
When did Brendan say
that? Very particular set of skills, so I have.
I ain't got a cash majero. All
right, Danny, what about you then?
When we lost at Stoke last season, I got home on Boxing Day night. My family and guests were all around the house. I went straight upstairs to my room and I didn't come out. I'd say they all got over it, though. I'd say they were pretty happy about it.
I'm going to go have a go at one this week, I think, actually. This is just pure Brendan. My biggest mentor is myself, because I've had to study, and that's my biggest influence.
That's the daddy.
Who won this week? But before you say, Brendan Rodgers is a strange fuck.
He's a strange man. Who's won this week?
It was me.
Peter. You can have it. Why not?
Yeah.
Hello, pal.
All right. Well, let's go back to
Pat Jennings next week, lads. It's Pat Jennings next week.
No more Irishman. Pick something easy like a Geordie.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, actually, let's do that just for the shits and
giggles. I did a Gaza one last week, so we can throw that in there.
Yeah, that'll work. Right, let's get back to some actual football. And another good win for Watford, Carl. And this kid Richarlison, who we've been talking about in pre-season, well, he's pretty class, isn't he?
Well, they're proving me wrong at the moment, Watford, because I think in one of our very first podcasts, I tipped them to be in trouble and go down this year. And they actually now seem to be the best of the rest at the moment when you look at the league table. And they're playing really well. And as you say, Richarlison, he looks a real player, doesn't he? First season here, young, but he seems to have adapted really well. And yeah, he's going to have his bad games, but at the moment, he's really turning in a shift for Watford. But they look impressive at the moment. And if they can continue this on, then top 10 easily. And yes, you can see him getting potentially tonked by the better sides, maybe, like City. City might turn up and on their day could potentially give Watford the runaround. But the way it's looking, if they continue this form, then they'll be the best of the rest at the moment. And you could see that this could be a real stepping stone for Silva, to be honest. If they have this sort of season and continue this form, he's not going to be at Watford next season, that's for sure.
Yeah, boys, you know what's the... I think we actually talked about this just when the move went through, and then a couple of weeks later. I think a lot of people had in their head when they heard that there was a 19-year-old who never played out of Brazil coming straight over, that we were expecting some fella built like Robinho or Neymar or whatever, but this lad's 6'2", and like you said, Carl, it's not just going forward, it's the shift he puts in. I saw a stat the other day that he has the 8th most amount of tackles made in the entire league, and every other player in the top 10 is obviously a defender, you know? So that just shows you the kind of hard work he's putting in from that left wing position for them. So, really surprising that he's to come straight from South America and just fit it into a Premier League team straight away. Fair play to him.
He got a bit lucky with the goal, though. There's no one.
Alfie Mawson.
Did you see the effort of attack he put in? Side on with the side of his boot, rather than just putting the ball and your man up into the sky. He went in side on, and it was a shocking touch from Richarlison to even put himself in that position, and to let Richarlison go through. It was a tidy finish, don't get me wrong, and he does look like he's a good player, and he started well. And I have to say, fair play to Marco Silva. I just wanted to make a point. We were talking about it last week. The lads were patting Clement and Dyche on the back. They weren't my words. But the problem with me now, giving these lads the credit, so much credit for grinding out results and or fluking a 1-0 or something like that, is that you look at Swansea. I know we were just talking about Watford there, but I'll get on to them in a minute. You look at Swansea and you look at Burnley. Swansea ground out a 0-0 result away to Spurs. Now, what my problem was with it last week when the lads were going, you have to give them a pat on the back, fair play to them, they're going there. If you look at the records of Swansea at home and Swansea away and compare and look at Burnley at home and Burnley away, they've both only scored one goal at home, and every away game they've gone to play, to try and play the same sort of style and to play for a 0-0 draw. Right? Now, I think Scott agreed with me last week. The players that play for Swansea and the players that play for Burnley, they're not good enough, they're not flexible enough to be able to turn it round and go away and play for a 0-0. So it's nice to go away and draw a 0-0. But if that affects how you play at home, then that's a problem. But if you look at Watford, they got tonked 6-0 by City last week. And I think Scott agreed with me last week.
Absolutely.
They got tonked 6-0, but they stuck to their philosophy. They stuck to the way they're trying to play. They stuck to their manager's philosophy, whose job is, and I think the primary objective of any manager or coach is to try and improve players and give them confidence in their own ability. He's doing that. They got beaten 6-0 last week, and a lot of teams would have crumbled. A lot of managers might have reverted back to a more negative approach. No, what they did was they went out and played the exact same way, and they got a win. I know it was in the last minute against not a great side, but they got a 2-1 win. Now, if you go and draw a game away to a big team and then draw your home games, that's 2 points. If you're not afraid to get tonked now and again by the big teams, and you're only playing the big teams 10 or 12 games a season, if you go out and you can play good, expansive football and take on these teams that are trying to play for a draw, you're going to get more wins than draws and losses. And at the end of the season, you'll probably find Watford with a healthy enough win ratio, and they'll be streets ahead of, I know they're not ahead of, they're not streets ahead of Burnley and Swansea at the moment, but I'd say at the end of the season, you'll find them a good 10 points ahead, because they're going out and trying to win games. And the difference, the reason they changed a win and a draw from 2 points to 3 points is for people to go out and try and win games. And I'm glad to see Watford are trying to do it.
That's a fundamental point as well. Go on, Pete.
Right, I think there, I know what you're saying, right? And I think Paul Clement came out after the match and he actually admitted, he said, it was my fault. I played too defensively because it was successful at Spurs, right? That he should have went for it more against Watford.
I know, but see, that's
just
the problem.
Let me finish now, right? Let me finish, right? Because stats are great. I like stats as well. But you can twist stats as well because you're talking about Burnley there, right? Burnley had the fifth best home record last season in the Premier League. They would have qualified for Europe based on home form, right? So they got 33 points, I think, at home last year, which is better than most of some of the lads in the top five and six. They obviously haven't played as well at home this year, but you're twisting it there because they've played three games.
Well, you're twisting it. What's their away record like this season?
They stayed up. Well, I'm using a whole season. You're using three games. So I think in terms of it's a longer
period.
What
I'm saying is these teams aren't good enough, flexible enough to change styles to be able to adapt to different situations. They only know one way of playing. And if it's to go out and grind results away from home, they're taking that sort of form with them at home.
Not always. I think Swansea played good football for years now, to be fair, even when they weren't doing well.
I'm talking about now.
I'll talk about now then as well. But you know, I understand that lads say sometimes, look, they're not being negative and they're not playing thing. But like, you have to be realistic and say that like, Burnley's budget for playing wages, right? There's youth team players at Man United and Man City making more money than Burnley's highest earner, right?
Hold on, let me finish.
Them lads. Clubs like that, right, that don't have the resources of the other ones, okay? Their number one priority, it's to stay in the league. So then look at Stoke, maybe, okay? They came up and they played dogged, dirty defensive football for 5 or 6 years under Tony Pulis. Now they're established. Now they've had the big money coming in for years. And now you try and change your style of play. But to purely stay in the Premier League, going up against teams with bigger resources, all the rest of it, the best way to do it is to play direct, defensive, well-organised football. And to be fair to Swansea and Ting, they are coached very well in that particular style of play. Now, I understand that everyone, if they go out and try and play football against most other teams in that league, they'll be tonked 5-6-0 every week, okay?
But Watford got tonked last week. What I'm saying is you have to have confidence in your own ability as a coach and confidence in your own players and to know that you can improve them as players. And along the way, you're always going to get a hiding against the bigger teams, the better teams with a much bigger budget. But I respect managers so much more for going out there and trying to improve players, trying to play a nice brand of football rather than going and parking a couple of buses. Because at the end of the day, they'll keep parking buses and they'll keep either finishing 15th and below forever. But Watford, look at Watford now this season. I'd say most people agree that Watford will probably finish around 10th this season after finishing 17th, 16th, 17th last year.
Dan, let me just back up your point because I agree wholeheartedly. First off, Watford are taking the correct approach to football, and the way they're doing it is because they're going A to A to win games, which is what you watch football for, and from a fan's perspective, they're getting entertainment. But they know they're going to lose certain games along the way, and tonkings don't just come against big clubs to small clubs. We've seen big clubs like Liverpool get a tonking, and we've also seen the other flip side of the coin, Watford competing against the big clubs when they've played the likes of Liverpool. I can say this as a West Ham fan. I travelled to West Brom, as you know, last week, and I watched the home team defend for 90 minutes. They played for a point, and this was, you could say, two equal sides. Going back to Bilic's first season at the club, we were playing an entertaining brand of football. Now we're a bit more direct, but we're also seeing that his versatility as a manager and his ability to adapt to the game is nil. He just hasn't got that ability. But we look at previous teams in the top flight who've been entertaining. Swansea were mentioned. You can play entertaining football, and by playing entertaining football and finishing with wins under your belt, you're likely to attract bigger and better players because you're progressing up the league. And that's what people want to see. And last point, I mean, West Brom have got a great squad now, and yet they're still playing for a point at home against a miserable side like West Ham. So, I mean, yeah, you can play attractive football. All this fallacy of being defensive and knocking it long and being direct, it just doesn't wash for me.
Silver or West Ham, Scott?
He'll go to bigger and better things, I think.
Yeah, he could be the next Pochettino, or he could be the next Nigel Pearson. You don't know. It depends how the season pans out. I agree with Pete on that. Six games down, we'll see how they get on.
You know, I think to be fair, and just I understand what you're saying, lads. It's just from my point of view, I think you have to be pragmatic as well as a manager. And sometimes maybe your players aren't good enough to be able to switch systems and all. And some players probably like to be able to rely on systems.
Well, hang on, Peter. That actually kind of takes us on.
Sorry?
I was going to say, that actually takes us on nicely to the next one I want to talk about, which is Newcastle and Brighton, because Chris Hughton's done a good job of making that Brighton side a bit more pragmatic and playing within a system and making them hard to beat. They've won back-to-back games now for the first time in the top flight since 1982. So I guess Brighton fans and he himself, he's going to be pretty happy with that system.
All he wants to do is stay up, right? Yeah. And I think we've seen Chris Hughton at Newcastle and Norwich. You know, the Norwich fans weren't happy with him because he played that pragmatic defensive, probably, for want of a better word, long ball football, percentage football. I'd say it was a sweet win for him because Mike Ashley sacked him as well. It didn't end too well for him at Newcastle. DMX, to be fair, seems to be rocking whenever I've seen games there. It was a good win for them. I think Danny talked about it a couple of weeks ago. That boy, Gross, it wasn't a direct assist, but it was a great ball in for their goal. And I worked with a German lad, so whenever a player moves from the Bundesliga, I'm always asking about him. And he said to me that, he said, wait till you see how good this boy is at crossing, not just from open play, but from free kicks and corners. And I think for a team like that, that are going to play the percentage football, you know, they'll be relying on getting a couple of goals, likes of Shane Duffy and all, coming up from the back from set pieces. So to have a player so good at set piece delivery, it will be great for them. And, you know, ultimately, I still think Brighton would probably just about fall short. You know, they'll probably finish 36, 37 points and just go down. It's good that Hamed's now on 3 goals because he didn't really... I don't think most of us thought he was Premier League standard. So if Chris Hughton builds the Amex into, let's say, a bit of a fortress, and they do get a really good home record, as Burnley proved last year, that can be a springboard just to stay up and then maybe move on to better things. If they can get through to Christmas in and around 15, 16 position, and then maybe go out and get a bit more, touch more class in the forward areas, they might give themselves a chance. But I like Chris Hughton. I'd like to see them stay up, but I'm not going to lie, I think they'll probably just about fall short.
Right then, what about Everton, Danny? Because Coman was saved by Nias, and, well, we've probably all heard the stories about how he was trying to push him out of the club last year. He didn't have a locker, didn't have a club suit, apparently, when he was leaving the game this week.
Yeah, he was, didn't he score a hat-trick last year for the under-23s, Nias? And trying to force the manager's hand to even have a look at him. And Koeman was asked, and he said, "No, what about Omar Nias? He scored a hat-trick for the under-23s. He said, I hope he scores a hat-trick for the under-23s every week. You know what I mean? Which is very Koeman, and it might even be a bit more generalistic. And I might say it's a bit of a Dutch thing to say. You know, it's bad form, and I'm glad he was at that point where he was so desperate that he had to call him back. And he's desperate because of his own failings, I think. The thing I took from the game was, and we've talked about the three number 10s a few times, but I'm glad he saw the error of his ways eventually. They were playing three number 10s, and it's not working out for Everton. It's too much of a luxury for them. You'd Sigurdsson wasting on the left. Klaassen, you know, he seems to continue his difficult adjustment to the Premier League. He hasn't set the world alight by any stretch. And then Rooney was isolated on the right. And only when he took off two of the number 10s, I think he brought on Davies with Nyasa, that actually gave Sigurdsson a little bit of room in the number 10 role. And then Everton started to find their tempo. And it was the game-changing decision. And momentum changed. And Everton went on to win the game with two really good striker's goals, two goals that a striker would love to get. I thought his first goal was just brute power, lovely shift, bang. Nothing too fancy about it. Didn't try and clip it, put it in the corner. He hit the ball as hard as he could. And enough strikers don't do that for me. He just buried it past the keeper. And Everton were lucky at that stage because they were lucky, sorry, to get the equaliser because... after King had scored, and it was a very good goal by King. They had another chance. It was a similar sort of chance where King could have gone and laid it off to someone. He went and took a shot, scored the goal. He had a chance to do the same again when they were 2v1, and he slipped the ball into Defoe, and a real Defoe chance. You know, everyone knows what Defoe chance is. He scored one against Brighton last week. You just expect the net to bulge, and the keeper saved it. And just from there, Everton obviously got a little bit of another lease of life. And the ass came in and really made the difference. And I'd say there was a little bit of two fingers up to his manager. Fair play to him, because Everton are very light up top. And I mean very light up top. They hadn't scored in their previous three games. They'd lost the three. So it really was, I know they've had a tough start, Everton, but it really was a bit of a last chance saloon for them. Because if they'd lost that game, people are starting to think, all right, yeah, oh, granted, they can lose away to Chelsea and the likes and United, but you have to be beating Bournemouth. And he would have been under severe pressure the dough he's after spending. So it was a big result for them, and Nias got him out of jail, I have to say.
I like Everton. I have a few Everton mates, and I think we discussed it before, but some of their fans were tweeting stuff before the start of the season as if they were about to win the league, because I know they've got a bit of money, but it's not Man City money or PSG money they have. You know, it's just kind of higher level Premier League money. And I saw they were saying that they tried to get Diego Costa in at the end of the summer transfer, and there's reports today that they're going to bid for Cavani. They're losing the run of themselves, you know what I mean? Like, players like that are so far out of Everton's league, even though they have the few pound now, they're going to have to build it up gradually, and then maybe after two or three seasons in the Champions League, then they can go after players like Cavani or Costa. But think it, like, they're just wasting their own time and energy even trying to go in for players like that. I think it's just madness.
Well, they managed to get the win in the end, but it was another loss for Bournemouth. And Scott, that's a loss for Bournemouth and another loss for Leicester as well earlier, and they play each other this weekend. If Danny mentioned that Coman might be under pressure, but you got to be thinking that Howe and Shakespeare are going to be under pressure if this goes, if whichever team loses this game.
I don't think Howe will be under any pressure. I know the boys are going to laugh at this one. They think I'm sending him love letters each week.
Football friend.
He's a best friend. I think he's got godlike status over there. I don't think they'll be jumping on any bandwagon to get him out. I don't know any Bournemouth fans to say that, and I don't look on their forums or Twitter to see what's going on. But, I mean, I think they look at him as the saviour of their club. Obviously, he kept them from going into the conference, and then they've worked their way to the Premier League. So, because they're what perceived as being one of the smallest clubs, if not the smallest club in the league as well, he might get a pass for that. But if they don't start picking up results soon, they're inevitably going to be there or thereabouts when it comes to the end of the season. And I'm still going to stick with my prediction that they'll survive. Not comfortably, but they'll survive. I think there's a lot more pressure at Leicester. It was only 2 years ago that they won the Premier League, and they've still got a very, very good squad of players. So if they are sinking around the drain at some point, their manager Shakespeare's out the door. There's no two ways about it. And Leicester fans have probably still got their heads in the cloud. It's not, they might not see it as an anomalous season, a one-off. We go, well, we've still got the core of the squad that won us that division. We want something a bit more successful. We want to be challenging for top eights. We want to be looking at maybe top sixes, because Leicester are the club that should be where Watford are at the moment. I know we're six games in, but that's what the style of football they should be playing. That's where they should be seeing themselves. Leicester are one of the clubs that should be the best of the rest. There was only playing Champions League football last season, so you'd think there was an attractive option for bigger players. You can't compare what's going on at Bournemouth to what's going on at Leicester. So I can imagine, even if Bournemouth were sent down, Howe wouldn't be sacked, and I don't think there'd be too many screaming for him to get the sack. Whereas in a couple of weeks, if Leicester aren't picking up points, the Leicester fans will be calling for Shakespeare's head.
Well, if you've got any Leicester or Bournemouth fans, or just anyone who's got an opinion on that, can send us an email to info@psfootball.net. Lots to come on the show. We'll go through all the predictions. We will, of course, pick our John Terry Prick of the Week. But first, we need to talk about Rio Ferdinand. He's decided to change his career and he's going to be a boxer. What do we think of this? And have you got any other footballers who've changed their careers, you know, who've gone on to do something different? Peter, anything in mind?
Yeah, I think it's a bit ridiculous, to be honest with you. I think it was Barry Glendenning said on Football Weekly that he has a sneaking suspicion that Rio might have lost a few bob in a property thing. I think he's a property deal a couple of years ago, so maybe it's financially driven.
Was it?
Yeah, but I'm not yeah, I think it's a bit ridiculous. 38-year-old trying to become a professional boxer. It was a joke when Flintoff did it. Scott actually put him down as his JT Prick of the Week last week, so, and I agree with him. I did look up a few different ones, and I thought the one that caught my eye now was, do you remember Barry Horn used to play for Everton in the 90s?
Yeah, the Welshman.
Yeah, you know the way we always say footballers are thick, and most of them are, to be fair, but when he retired, he went and he did a master's in chemistry and physics, and he's now a physics teacher in a school in Chester. And another one that caught the eye was Vicente Lizarazu, who was probably the best left, the French left-back, played for Bayern Munich. He's probably one of the best left-backs in the world during the 90s. And when he gave up playing, he went and became a world champion, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu champion. So I suppose it can be done, but I don't think Rio's going to become a world heavyweight champion, you know what I mean?
Is there another one now? It's Matthew Flamini. Isn't he going to save the world? Isn't there something that he's invested in, some biochemical thing that's going to...
Yeah, it's his own company. It's worth... it's worth billions or something. I can't remember the exact details, but yeah,
it's
I remember
make biofuels, basically.
Last year. Fair play to him.
Yeah.
Well, you have to feel a bit sorry for Kevin Coyle then, don't you? Did you see the one about Kevin Coyle? Yeah. What was he earning? 10 grand a week, maybe. He should play. I think he went from Kilmarnock to Sunderland. He would have been earning 10 grand a week. Had a bit of a gambling problem. Now he's working 400 quid a week stacking shelves. So it's a career change. I know it's not one.
It's better than playing for Sunderland, Luke.
But yeah, well,
It's the opposite to Thomas Gravesen, who's an investor in Las Vegas and he's living the higher life out there. Or Fabian Barthez, who's
not Lee Carsley, no?
No, it's definitely not Louis Carsley. He's married in Birmingham. So,
isn't that what happened when he went to Real Madrid?
What was that?
Remember Gravesen went to Real Madrid from Chelsea. Supposedly, I'd heard that a couple of Real Madrid scouts went, and they were actually looking at Lee Carsley.
No way!
So what, Peter? So what? About- You know what I mean? Yeah, teacher. You know what I mean? It's so what? That's what I heard. If it's true, it's true. If it's not, it's not.
It's bullshit.
Well, I heard it. Actually,
When he played for Everton, there was one season where he had the best stats in Europe in all midfield stats, passes, interceptions, blah, blah, blah. And that's why he went to Real Madrid. But they did realise pretty quickly that he wasn't much better than Lee Carsley, I'd say, might be.
Well, let's talk about the John Terry Prick of the Week then. Who's it going to be? We've already spoiled your one, Peter. Have you got another one?
Yeah. I do, actually. The one about Jamie Vardy, one of the lads who started writing for the site, Adam Smith, he actually sent me in about Vardy saying, how he knew exactly where Vardy was going to go, blah, blah, blah. I actually thought it myself, and I put it in earlier. So I'm actually going to go with, it might be a bit controversial, but I'm going to go with Jay Rodriguez, because I don't know if you ever watched the game last night. Did anybody see when he tried to get back up? I was watching that, and I was just going, you fucking idiot, stay down. Stay down, take your penalty, mate. There was contact. I don't condone just diving when no one's around you, but if you're playing up front, I did it myself. If you run a defender into an area that he's going to make contact with you, go down, stay down, take your penalty. It wasn't even, he was quite wide as well. Like, you wouldn't call it a, it was always
you'd rather a penalty.
Huh? You'd rather a penalty. It wasn't like it was, you know, we'd an open goal to get up to, so... Yeah, I thought he should have just stayed down, taken the pen, and would have been a different game then, I'd say. The Magic Tony Pulis and his merry band, the Samba Superstars, had went 1-0 up.
They haven't had a penalty in 3 years.
Who?
West Brom.
That's insane.
All the refs are afraid of Tony.
I thought he had a magic hat, though. He must, maybe he needs to rub it or something like that, but like 3 years is...
That's just Tony being a good football man and telling his players to stay in their feet and all that kind of stuff. So it's his fault, really. Carl, what about you? Got a prick of the week?
Yeah, for me, it's PSG. When you start offering players £1 million to let someone else take penalties just because you brought Neymar... Once we've got clubs actually starting to pay players off to not take penalties and let someone else take one, then the fucking game's dead.
Off? Did they pay off Cavani?
They offered Cavani, yeah.
They have offered Cavani £1 million bonus if he lets Neymar take penalties from now on. And once that starts happening, the game is dead once that's happening. Well, it's just ridiculous.
They're saying that's basically to sort of compensate for the goal bonus that he would be getting if he was scoring all those pens.
Yeah.
It's kind of bullshit anyway. But, so yeah, PSG, I think we can all agree generally are pricks. Scott, what about you?
Mine's an easy one, and it's constant antagonism from Karen Tits McGee Brady, writing in a flipping column. I hope West Ham get 3 points today, but I'd like Spurs to win the league. Are you taking the piss? I mean, there was not a West Ham fan before the game who thought, oh yeah, I agree with that. That's fantastic. I 100% agree with her sentiment. What an absolute plum of a woman. She's my JT prick of the week.
I don't even know why you support West Ham, actually, Scott. It's always a prick of the week from West Ham for you.
It's easily done. We're surrounded by them.
Danny, what about you?
I'm going to do this. I want people to guess who am I? I'm the brightest. I'm Henry Kelly here, right? Yeah. The brightest prospect in English football a couple of seasons ago.
Stop now, that pressure.
Now I sit behind a Dutchman, an Italian, and a winger for my fullback for my pursuit of a left back position.
Luke Shaw.
You got it. He's now fourth in line. Ashley Young is. It's all right being behind. Maybe being behind Blind, Darmian. I don't really rate, but Ashley Young taking your position. He was the next big thing, the next bright big thing. And what's really depressing is I take him at Liverpool and he's four choice fullback. You know, that's what depresses me. So I don't know if Mourinho might be a prick because he doesn't like him or rate him. I still rate him. But to be four choice at United behind some of those fullbacks means he must be a prick. So he's my JT prick of the week.
And Danny, actually, I fully agree with you. I hadn't even entered my conscience until you brought it up, but that's a great point. Like that one a lot.
Thanks. So, geez, everyone's coming up roses today.
Teacher.
Well, says your man there.
Let's get on to the predictions then. Next week, we'll start with Huddersfield and Spurs. Peter, do you want to go with that one?
I think Huddersfield have had a great start, haven't they? What is it, 8-9 points to run? But they haven't really. This will be, I think, as far as I remember, this will be the first of the big boys they meet, and I think their luck will probably run out. So I fancy Dele Alli. He hasn't been on the score sheet as much as usual this season, so I fancy him in the anytime mark at 11-8. And I think Spurs will run out comfortable winners in the end, 3-1, which is 10-1.
Carl, we spoke about Bournemouth and Leicester a little while ago, but who's going to win that one?
Leicester for me all day long. And again, another defeat on Eddie Howe's bedpost.
Leave him alone. Leave him alone, you horrible sod.
Leicester 2-0 for me, and that would get you potentially that score at 2-0 Leicester can get you 7-1 worth a bet.
Scott, Man United are playing Palace. United are at home, they're scoring loads of goals. Palace can't buy a goal, so it's only going to go one way, is it?
Yeah, if you're Palace fan, if you was Crystal Palace, it's like being sent up to the executioner's axe. You're just looking at it going, well, I'm going to take my last breath here before Lukaku penetrates the goal end. I do mean goal end as well. I'm going to have him for an hat-trick and Man United to steamroll Palace. Another 4-0 for me.
Danny, what about Stoke and Southampton?
What about it, mate?
This is the stinker of the weekend, is it?
Yeah, I'm getting lumbered with a few of these. I'm going for another nil all. Another nil all, 5-1. Honestly, I can't see. Both teams have about 9 centre backs each. They'll probably play a few of them. If they're playing the backyard now, I'd be pulling the blinds. That's the truth.
5-1 and nil all is a great bet, though. Peter, what about?
I think so.
Peter, what about West Brom and Watford?
I'm not going to go against the man with the magic hat. Watford are brilliant away record, but I reckon Tony will have a plan to just wear them down a little bit. I'm going to go Jay Rodriguez, even though I put him in as my prick of the week. I think he came so close to scoring so many times last night that he'll get on the score sheet this time. And I'm going to go for he's 23-10, Jay Rodriguez, any time. And I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw at 6-1.
Carl, West Ham and Swansea face. Who's going to win that?
For me, West Ham in this one. Played well enough against us. So I think Swansea at home, they'll be too good for them. So I'm going to go 2-1 at 6-1.
Danny, the last game you had was a shit one. This one's probably the game of the weekend, Chelsea and City.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this now. Half five, isn't it? Yeah, really looking forward to it. I'm going to go for City. I'm going to go for City to win 3-2. Everyone's saying, yeah, you know, City haven't come up against a tough team yet, a team that will grind and sit back and all that sort of stuff. I still think their confidence must be flying at the moment. I don't think Chelsea are as solid as they were last year. I'm going to go for 3-2 City, 22-1. I just think there'll be goals. It's not usually, but I think there'll be goals in this. So, 3-2 City.
All right, Scott, what about Arsenal and Brighton? Can Brighton make it 3-3?
Nah, fam, they can't. You get me blood. I'm going with Arsenal 2, Brighton 1 at 10-1, fam. You get me?
I get you, fam. Peter, Everton, Burnley.
Yeah, I'm going to go them dastardly devils of Burnley, the anti-football bastards. They're going to go to St Park and make it tough. So I'm going to go with under 2.5 goals at evens. Don't think that's bad for an accumulator now. And I think Everton will scrape through just about a 1-0 at 6-1.
And finally, Newcastle-Liverpool, Carl.
I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw here at 14-1. And I think, obviously, the way Liverpool concede from set plays and the way Newcastle have scored from a few, that could be up there. But I'll have a Salah and Coutinho for Liverpool, but 2-2 in the end.
All right, that's it. Thanks so much, Peter.
Cheers, lads. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Carl.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, lads. Fair play.
And that's it for me. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back again next week. See ya. Thanks again for listening to the PS Football Podcast. We'll be back again next week. And in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can find us on Facebook. We're on Twitter at @_PS_football. We're on Instagram at @PSFootball. That's football with a U. And you can email us at info@PSFootball.net. If you like the show, you can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud or Stitcher. And if you like, rate, comment and or share the pod around. We'd really appreciate that too, as it helps other people to find it. Next week, we've got a special guest, a referee. So we'll have questions for him. If you've got any questions, refereeing questions, stuff about the game, want to get in touch, and we'll post those questions for you. We'll see you next time.